Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership-experience.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Dr. Eric Block is a practicing dentist and also one heck of an entrepreneur. He's also a huge fan of the band Phish, so we do get to talk about that. And I love it because we both grew up listening to Phish, and he's one of the many that are still out there rocking out to this band, and that's always super fun. I always really get a kick out of meeting people my age that are still into the band Phish, so that's really fun. I got to meet Dr. Eric last year through the IADLC, which is the International Academy of Dental Life Coaches, and it's been an absolute pleasure and such an honor to be part of this small collective of dental life coaches where we all are collaborating together with the mission of supporting one another and also supporting professionals in the dental industry. Eric shares about his own journey with burnout, his recovery from it, and all the really cool things that he's doing these days to not only support the profession, but also make it a little bit easier and that much more efficient. He's got books, he's got a podcast, he's developing a software platform, and he's also the co-founder of this Dental Life Coaching, and he's just got a lot of really cool stuff going on. He's a really, really neat guy, and I'm so grateful that he's part of the dental community, and I'm pretty sure you're really going to enjoy listening to this conversation. Here is Dr. Eric Block. Dr. Eric, welcome to the Real Talk of Dental podcast. I'm really excited to have you on today, and we're just going to jump right into it. I'm a huge music lover, and of course, I was just completely stoked when I saw that you are a huge fan of the band Phish, and there's not too many people out there that I still know that are huge fans of Phish. There's a handful. Grew up listening to a lot of Phish, but Phish plays a major part of your life, like as far as just even your admiration and using them as sort of a branding vibe style point for you. So tell me a little bit more about your love for the band Phish and what it's meant to you over the years.
Yeah, so I'm 50 and I graduated high school in 93. And I was first like majorly into like AC/DC and even some heavier stuff before that. But once I got into high school and my friends and I discovered Phish, we were just hooked. And then I was also into like Dave Matthews Band and Pearl Jam and all that stuff. But I kept on, you know, listening to Phish. I love the improvisation that they do, and it's just so relaxing, and still more way into their early stuff. I don't even really know some of their newer stuff. But for me, my zen is I could just sit on the couch and throw on a YouTube video of Phish performing live, and I am in. I'm all set. So they're such a great band. And, you know, to me, they're just timeless.
Yeah. I know. And I'm sure, have you been to a lot of their shows?
Yeah, when I was in college and shortly after college, I went to a ton of shows and would travel and see them. I haven't been to one in a while. It's been probably like 10 years, but you can find them on YouTube and it's so easy to watch a show. But I used to go to a ton of shows back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, I know. As we get older, the allure of going to shows, for me anyway, gets less and less. So I'm with you on that for sure. And that's super fun. And I totally get it because I think there's something about just the connection between the different band members and how they approach their music and their style. And they have been around for so very long. And especially knowing some of the journeys a few of the members have taken, it's cool to know that they're still active and making music. So I know for big fans, there's so much that even as leaders, right, we can pull from that when we see groups of people staying together for that long with all their different egos. Right? Still making music. It's no easy feat, right?
Yeah, they do shows and it's always a different show. And I think that's one of their things. Like they won't do a residency type of thing because U2 will play the Sphere and they'll play U2's awesome, but they'll play the same show like every night. And Phish is just not willing to do that. They like to mix it up. So that's another thing I truly appreciate about them. When you go to a show or you see a show on YouTube, it's going to be totally different than the show before.
Yeah, I love that too. That's always super fun. Yeah, you mentioned Pearl Jam. And I've been a huge Pearl Jam fan for a long time. And I was talking with someone else on here recently too, Dr. Jeff Grove, who you know as well. He's a huge Pearl Jam fan. So we were talking about that. And just it's interesting when you grow up listening to a band and then you're also aging with the band. That's always kind of interesting too, because it's like they're not, you know, you're like, they're getting a little older and that means so am I. So yeah, that's been kind of fun watching, you know, Pearl Jam. Gosh, I don't even know how many decades they've been together now, but just knowing how they started. I remember when they celebrated their 10th anniversary being together or something like that. It was just this like huge deal because they were so tumultuous in the beginning, but it's fun. Yeah, it's really fun to age with bands that are still playing music. And I don't take it for granted, like when you really think about it, like how many bands have come and gone and some of those mega bands that are still around, still playing music, it's pretty incredible. I've really gotten into, my husband is a huge, huge, huge Beatles fan, and it's passed down from his dad. And so him and his dad are just these, I don't know, Beatle encyclopedias. And we've watched the anthology now multiple times. It's usually on playing at some point in the evening. And just even knowing, and I'm a big Beatles fan as well, but not as big as my husband or my father-in-law. And it's just really interesting, the more times you watch it, like hearing their stories about what they endured early in their career. And I didn't realize like how much, I mean, obviously I knew Beatlemania and the intense stardom and fandom that created, you know, when they came out, but then how they were just destroyed by the media and the, you know, and I think it was George Harrison was saying, you know, you get so big, there's nowhere else you can go but down, and how they were just, you know, ripped apart, you know, the further along they got in their music, the different styles of music they were playing, the different albums and things like that, and what they're blamed for by the media and the press and everything like that was just really incredible. And I don't know, you just forget some of that stuff. And shockingly, you know, their music is timeless and the music will be around forever, but the Beatles themselves had such a short run in the scheme of things, you know, compared to bands like Phish and stuff like that. So yeah, we could talk about music all day, I'm sure. Huge part of my life. But let's get back to you. So one of the things that, well, we met through the IADLC, right? Dental Life Coaches. And I think it's so awesome, like what you've created with Laura. And it's just such a powerful community of people. And I know that it was born out of a lot of personal experiences for you and what you've endured as a practicing doctor and what you needed. So tell me your story. Tell me about how you started out in dentistry, how you hit this wall of burnout, and then ultimately created now this group of dental life coaches.
Yeah, I'll give you the blocky origin story. I'm from Massachusetts and I ended up going to Tulane University undergrad. I thought I was going to apply to the business school and graduate with a degree in business, but I took some classes like microeconomics and macro and statistics, and I'm like, nope, this is not for me. I had to choose something, so I chose psychology as a major. I ended up graduating with a degree in psychology, but about my junior year, I actually broke my front tooth, my number 9 central incisor on a beer bottle, and I had cracked my tooth in half. And I went to a local dentist the next day in Metairie, Louisiana, based off of a referral from a classmate. And I just loved the way they took care of me. And they patched me up. They gave me my smile back. They gave me a great experience. And I said, you know what? Maybe dentistry is something I could do. So I had to do some catch up and took all the prereq classes. I graduated with psychology, as I mentioned, and I took a year off, took the prereq classes, took the DAT. entrance exams and taught tennis. That was my year off. And I finished everything. I applied to Nova Southeastern in Fort Lauderdale and got into dental school there. And then I did another 2-year residency at Boston University, and that brought me back to Massachusetts. And that was an implant residency. And then I entered into the real world, and I hit a big rock bottom about halfway through my career of just total burnout. You know, some people may call it a midlife crisis, but I was just not a happy camper. I was so stressed and anxious and regretting my place in dentistry, regretted becoming a dentist. I thought about doing anything else because I was so stressed and anxious during the day. I thought about just, you know, giving up dentistry and working in a cubicle somewhere. I actually thought about, you know, I was so worried about getting sued and this irrational fear of getting sued that I thought about going to law school so I could flip the script and be the one doing the suing. And I realized that this was not going to happen. I was $250,000 in debt. I had no other skills. I didn't want to go back to school. So I really took a look at myself in the mirror and I said, you've got to make some changes here. You got to do something because you can't be miserable going into work every day. And you've got, you know, one life and you chose this profession. Let's make the best out of it. And I'd always wanted to do this, but I finally did it. And I just picked up the phone and I called a local therapist and started going through therapy. And we just dug in every 2 weeks about why I was so anxious and so stressed. And it was all up here. It was just me putting too much pressure on myself, me being a good old fashioned perfectionist, which a lot of dental professionals suffer from, and me just not being comfortable in my own skin, and me always trying to help others. And I learned through therapy that I needed to take care of myself first before I could take care of others. And it took a while. It didn't happen overnight, but I got back to the point where I actually love going into work every day, most days, of course. But I love dentistry again. And I wanted to share my story with other dental professionals to realize that it doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to be miserable going into work every day. I was at the point where I couldn't wait until 5 o'clock to go home. I couldn't wait until the weekend to decompress from the week. I couldn't wait until lunch so I could go home for an hour. And I for sure told myself I couldn't wait until I retired so I wouldn't have to do this anymore. And that's no way to live. And I wanted to share my story and hopefully get some others out there to get some help that they need, because we've all heard the statistics in dentistry about drug abuse, substance abuse, suicide, you know, depression, anxiety, and these problems don't go away on their own. So that's where my first book came from, The Stress-Free Dentist, and the whole Stress-Free Dentist brand, because I wanted to share my story and try to help others to take action. And that's where the International Academy of Dental Life Coaches came from, because I personally knew that I wanted to get help, and it took me a while, and I wish I had done it sooner, but I picked up the phone and I reached out for help. I took action. I was a psychology major. I knew I wanted to do that, but others may not know where to turn to. So that's where the IADLC comes in, is that if you're out there and you're a struggling dental professional, you're burned out, the IADLC is a place you can go and we'll match you up with a life coach. And it's for anyone, hygienist, dentist, you know, admin, assistant, men, women, you know, whatever you need, we're there for you. And that's really where that came from.
Yeah, I love it. And I love your entrepreneurial spirit in the sense of like you're creating what you needed at the time, right? Like a resource to link people up to get you the help that you needed. And during your time, like in therapy and working on yourself, were you able to identify like what some of the root causes were of where your fear, your unreasonable fears and anxieties were coming from?
Yeah. And again, like I mentioned, it didn't happen overnight. And before I started doing therapy, I would always focus on like the one negative thing that would happen during the day or just the negatives. And I couldn't shake the day. Like I would just be thinking, you know, up at night, thinking about the day, all the things that went wrong or all the things I could have done better. And I was really, the social aspect of the profession was just eating me up, because even though I have a podcast and speak and do all these other things, I'm more introverted. And I didn't understand that. Therapy taught me who I was and, you know, my personality. And I realized that there's nothing wrong with me. It's just kind of the way I'm wired. And ultimately, with figuring out what made me tick, I got more comfortable in my own skin. Also, we added in some prescribed medications, and that took a while to kind of lock in. But after a while, there was just became this like absence of replaying the day over and over and me focusing on the negative things. And I started focusing on the positive things, and it just cleaned a lot of garbage out of my head. I also made some major changes. Like I removed a lot of negativity from my life. I really try to hang out with and be in touch with peers that are positive people. There's just so many things that I did, but really the first step was just taking that action, reaching out for help. And it could be a life coach, it could be a consultant, it could be a mentor, a therapist, whatever it takes to not go through this profession alone, because it is a demanding profession. It is difficult. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I would say it probably took me about 6 months to a year for me to start to see some positive changes. And life coaching and therapy will always be part of my life, because I feel like it's, you know, we go to the gym and we work on our biceps, but, you know, coaching and therapy is like doing yoga for your brain, and you only get one brain and you only get, you know, one time on this earth, and you got to make the best of it.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you had the courage to ask for help. I think that's where so many people get caught up, and you touched on the idea of perfectionism. And I've noticed that too, just even some of the folks that I've worked with, and or what holds people up from really getting the help that they need is thinking that somehow they're failing if they can't figure this thing out. And I've shared this many times in various platforms, but this idea that especially for successful entrepreneurs, they think because they're really good at that, they should be good at everything. And I think that's where it can get confusing too, that you can be really good at certain aspects of a business, but there's really nobody out there that is really amazing and awesome at every single thing, you know? So the mind is funny, where we experience levels of success and we think, oh, well, I should be able to figure this out. And I think that's where like our wisdom and our maturity, and once you do start working on yourself, you're able to recognize like your gifts and where you're really strong, and then maybe where you need some support. So even for you, you're like, hey, I'm an introvert. Like, I can have conversations, I enjoy engaging with people, but on the day-to-day, you probably need support at the practice level in like the ongoing engagement, right? Whether it's with the team or the patients, and recognizing where you can use some support as far as leading team meetings or whatever. Like, people can carry that emotional load for you when it comes to that consistent engagement. But even, you know, someone like yourself, you can be a really great clinician, not be great at patient or team engagement, and think, oh my God, what is wrong with me? And thinking you're constantly fighting this battle of having to fix yourself versus recognizing, oh yeah, maybe I'm just an introvert. And that's just something natural. I mean, or you could just be somebody that's like not great at, I don't know, like for me, I'm not great at social media. And as much as I'm, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, so I like to think that I'm pretty hip, but I'm not really that hip when it comes to social media these days, you know? Especially you're seeing the younger generation, I'm like, dang, those are some great ideas. And it's like, it's overwhelming for me. And it's also not the best use of my time, right? So those types of things I can delegate out or something like that. And just because you're a master of a couple things doesn't mean you're a master of all. And I think that's something to really continuously remind people of, the entrepreneurs, the perfectionists, and those that have experienced success.
Yeah. So when I came out of school, I was a master of very little. I came out, and I think a lot of dental professionals can relate to this, but I came out with the bare minimum clinical skills. I had no idea about business management, staff management. I didn't even know how to talk to patients. Looking at an FMX was exhausting to me. And so my theory on this perfectionist thing is that people that go to, you know, hygiene school or dental school, a lot of us have only known success. Like, we did well in school, we worked hard. If we didn't do well in a test, we just studied harder and we did better. You get into school and you just work harder, you work on that typodont more, you do your clinical requirements, you pass your exams, you pass your state and look your national boards. But then when you get into the real world, you are working on real human beings. You're working in an environment it's not a school environment anymore. You no longer have that instructor to lean on. You have upset patients. You get bad reviews. You make mistakes. You have failures. And sometimes it's the first taste of failure. And a lot of dental professionals can't handle that. It can really beat them up. After a while, all of a sudden, you know, fillings break and crowns don't fit, and they're running late and they're stressed and their staff arguing and they're you're getting a bad review, or, you know, there's something going on with billing and insurance and all these things that you just weren't prepared for. And if you just start to, I compare it to like taking a volleyball and just pushing it down under a pool, and you suppress all these emotions and all these issues, that volleyball is just going to come popping out, and you're going to burst, and you're going to have all these, you know, these problems. And that's where a lot of people run into burnout. But I was that person. I was trying to be a perfectionist. I was trying to make everything perfect. And when things didn't go perfect, I would beat myself up. And also, you mentioned the emotional load. Being an introvert, that social aspect of the profession where I have my patient in my chair and I have to give them this great experience and I could be doing some exhausting procedure, but then I have to go pop in and do 5 hygiene exams and give those patients my A game. Now, do that 8 hours a day, you know, over and over and over again was exhausting to me. And I really thought there was something wrong with me, but that's, you know, just how I'm wired. And I think a lot of dental professionals can kind of fall into that. The other thing is entrepreneurial. I didn't really become entrepreneurial until COVID. For me, a light switch went on, and before, all I was a dentist. All I knew is dentistry. Those things took a while to hone my clinical skills, to hone my treatment planning, to hone being a leader, which I still struggle with today, to hone how I communicate with patients. But being an entrepreneur is very different than being a dentist. But a light switch went off during COVID because I had time. And that's where I developed my brand and developed the podcast. And entrepreneurs understand failure. They understand mistakes. Dentistry is an extremely safe profession. You know, when you go into dentistry, it's very rare for a dental office to go out of business. But in the entrepreneurial world, if you have a startup, like I'm working on a SaaS startup, it's extremely rare to be successful. It's like almost the opposite. So to me, those are like two different worlds, the dentistry world and entrepreneurial world. I just went on a total rant and I don't remember the question you asked.
No, it's perfect. I didn't really ask a question. It was just, you know, chatting with you about recognizing what you're good at, you know, and what you're not. And yeah, and it's a great segue too to just talk a little bit about the Dental Life Coaches group that you started and what has been, and that I'm a part of and I've loved being a part of so far. And what has been like your greatest joy, I guess, in bringing that group together and creating that for people? What have you learned since you started it?
Yeah, so I co-founded it with Dr. Laura Brenner, and I reached out to her and I said, you know, we've got to do this because dental professionals, number one, dental professionals are out there and they're struggling. There's burnout. People are leaving the profession. What we don't want to happen is that, you know, they're turning to drugs or alcohol or worse, suicide. We want a place for people to go to get some help. And number two is we also wanted to create a community for coaches to get together and have like a mastermind community where we bounce ideas off of each other. We learn from each other for those that are already coaches. Or if someone's looking to start a second career, you know, they're phasing out of dentistry and they're looking for something else to do and they want to coach, then we created an environment to help get into the coaching industry and support them and create a community and share our strengths and weaknesses. And so it's that, to me, those two things have just been so rewarding.
Yeah, that's so great. And yeah, I love the two of you together. Yeah, it's such a great combo. And well, tell me more about this new company that you're starting now too. It sounds pretty.
Yeah, so it's called Use Flomo, and it's a place to go. And this is the most boring subject in the world, but it's a place for dental offices to go and create and store standard operating procedures, which is basically like store all your workflows, your recipes, you know, everything you do from time you walk into the office and turn the lights on and turn the compressor on to the time you leave for your end of day checklist and everything in between. It could be clinical, it could be non-clinical. My thought process is every time you do a task, you should write down the steps, document it, and then put it in the bank. And it could be how to change the amalgam separator. It could be how you want the staff to answer the phones or how to set up for a composite filling. But if you do it once and you document it, then it's repeatable. And as dentists and dental professionals, it gets tiring repeating yourself over and over all day. And staff turnover is exhausting. You know, training new staff is a major pain point for dental professionals, especially in this day where staff is hard to find, it's expensive, it's costly to train. So if you can document all your processes and workflows and like recipes in a cookbook, then it takes a lot of stress off the day-to-day. It makes you more efficient, it makes you less stress, and it makes onboarding new staff much easier.
Yeah, that's huge. And it really, I mean, the more I've been in this industry and the more I talk and work with people too, I mean, systems are such a huge player in burnout, lack of systems, right? And I don't think people realize like how much energy it takes when you're doing things over and over and over and over and over again. And also if your systems are inefficient, right? So a woman I had on recently too, Brittany Rogars, she's a, you know, open dental aficionado. And we talked a lot about how even people develop inefficient protocols using Open Dental, and they don't even realize that they're inefficient and that there's better ways to do things. And then that becomes a major time suck. And then as the practices get bigger, they're building on top of these really broken or Frankenstein type systems or protocols. And the team, often some of your best team members, are the ones that then get exhausted and burnt out because all those tasks start to add up, right? Just on the brain and the nervous system, and people just get really, really exhausted. And I've seen multiple times, I know prior to jumping on, we were just even talking about training assistants and stuff like that. And an issue that I often see in so many offices is different protocols for different assistants, right? So you can have an ideal of how you want the room set up, but depending on what assistant you're working with, sometimes it's set up that way, sometimes it's not. And it's maddening for a lot of people, doctors and even hygienists or what have you, and even office managers. It's like, I don't understand, like, why can't they follow this basic assistant protocol? And then having, because people are getting trained by different people and they're just passing down what they know versus like an actual procedure or protocol. And then the follow-up is, how do you handle it when it's not being followed, right? A lot of times most people don't like confrontation. They don't want to rock the boat. They just kind of want to, it's good enough, you know, and they just sort of take it on. And then you have doctors walking into rooms with different setups, figuring it out, just dealing with it on the fly. That adds to the exhaustion. You have people complaining out in the hallway or in the break area or behind the scenes. You know, this person is strong, this person isn't. You know, teams are always sort of gossiping or talking about the weaker links on the teams, and nobody does anything about it. They all just kind of deal with it. That erodes at culture, that erodes at the vibe, that adds to burnout and frustration as well. So it's like, oftentimes we think, you know, we have these big quote unquote problems, and a huge part of my coaching work and something I preach about all the time is the fundamentals, right? Like, sometimes we have these problems and we think, oh, the solution has to be monumental, right? Like, we have to bring in this or a whole new technology suite or a whole new piece of equipment, or we need 3 more hires. You know, most office managers or admins are saying they need more people because everyone's so burnt out, and that's what they're looking at. And often it's like the minutiae, the fundamental stuff needs to be addressed first before anything else. And even just on a human-to-human level, it's like, I have a personal trainer that I rave about, and I love her because I was like, I want to up my workouts, you know, lifting weights to 4 times a week. And she's like, I want you to walk more. I'm like, walk, you know, because you were talking about stress and stuff like that. And it's just like, you forget sometimes when you're really like burnt out, stressed, overwhelmed, sometimes you just need to go on a freaking walk. Sometimes, honestly, I've had clients, I have assigned them to go out and hug trees. And I'm like, just hug the tree. Trust me, do this when you do it, you're going to feel better. Or, hey, maybe you just need to go to bed earlier. Or, hey, maybe you just need to eat a meal. You know, there's like some of these things that we really need to just address first versus the big moves, right? So I love what you're saying because you're really talking about the basic fundamental stuff that most people just skip right over. And here you have it documented, but also saved and organized in a really beautiful way so that it's easy to find, so that anyone can go in there and find it, and it's easy to do and it can be duplicated. And sounds like the leaders can often easily check it too to make sure that it's correct, or if there's any edits that to be made or updates and things like that.
Yeah, you nailed a lot of it. A lot of this has to start from the leadership. I'm actually writing a book called The Efficient Dentist, which is a kind of a complimentary book to the software, but it's got to start from the top. And if you're the dentist or the office manager, and I say this may seem overwhelming, but start with your top 5 pain points, your top 5 frustrations, or the things you're repeating the most. And it could be something simple, like you're constantly getting asked, how much time do you need for a crown, or does the staff answer the phones, or something big like we're going out of network. We can create workflows and steps and a recipe to do that. But my eureka moment for for this was I had a staff member that was like our rock. She was there for 19 years and she was retiring. And she had a lot of that knowledge in her head. And a lot of it wasn't documented. We're training someone new. And that was kind of a wake-up call. And I also call it, my mom's name is Judy, so I like to use her name. She never worked for me, but I call it the Judy phenomenon, where let's say Judy's the only one that knows how to take a CT scan. And she's not in that day. And someone needs a CT scan and no one knows else how to do the procedure. Well, that's a loss of revenue. It's confusion. It doesn't look good to the patient. And then what if Judy just never comes back? What if she retired? Is all that information lost in her head? There's also the double whammy that I write about. The double whammy is when a patient calls and asks a question like, is bleaching covered in our membership plan? And Judy is on the phone and she says, I don't know. Hang on 1 minute. Judy asks Mike sitting next to her, hey, Mike, is bleaching covered in the membership plan? And Mike has to put his patient on hold and answer. Mike's my dad's name too. And Mike has to answer Judy. Now it's the double whammy. Now we've gotten two staff members involved. We put two patients on hold. And these are staff members you're paying their wage for. And this is not efficient. And you multiply this over and over and over during the day and over a year or career. It's so much time and energy. But you've got to make these, you got to start documenting things, start slow, and make them super simple. You know, you want to have someone that's never done the procedure, the task before, to be able to finish the task. If they can't, then you got to alter it and adjust it and make it so it's simple. Because if you have a new staff member come in, and they may be totally new to dentistry, it's so nice to have protocols and policies in place and documented, like you said, easy to find and where everyone knows, and customizable as well.
Yeah, that's so cool. I love it. I love how you're designing all of these things that really help you, you know, what helped you, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that, just the helping ease some of the frustration and burnout and creating better systems. And then also with the coaching aspect as well, helping people find access in those ways. What are some things that like you implement now, because it sounds like you've come such a long way in your own personal development growth, and you're still practicing dentist, right? So you're still in it. So you've overcome a lot and you now have the space to create and be an entrepreneur and develop all these things. What are some of the practices that you now implement on a personal level that have really helped you overcome some of the big mental blocks that you had?
Yeah, I also just want to add, and this is my favorite sections of the book, The Efficient Dentist, is also when a staff comes in and takes a dump in your office. And when I say that, I mean they're dumping a problem. They're giving you a problem. They have a monkey on their back and they're putting the monkey on your back, such as the intraoral camera's not working, you know, can you fix it? And then they leave and the dump has just been dropped on your lap. So having SOPs, just it makes the dentists have to repeat themselves less. It holds staff accountable. It just makes you more efficient, and it's like a backup. It's like a, you know, wingman that's there to help you. So that was one of my favorite sections of the book, and I had fun writing that part. But so some things that have really helped me continue to enjoy going to work and not get burned out is, number one, I'm always adding what I call the three T's. So techniques, technology, and treatment modalities. So I'm always adding new things. And it could be something small, like new technique I use to do a filling, a new, you know, anesthetic technique that I learned, to something big, like I got a 3D printer, to a new treatment modality, like I added sleep and airway. Every year I'm adding something new. And that keeps me re-energized and love going into work every day. Over the years, I've added clear aligners, I've added same day crowns. These things just make me enjoy being a dentist and going into work. And the other thing is being an entrepreneur and not just being a dentist, having these other, you know, side gigs or side hustles going on. At the end of the day, my main gig is being a dentist. I'm still a full-time practicing dentist, but I have all these other things that occupy my brain. And if, let's say, a patient cancels, I used to have the front desk like hustle and call and find out where that patient is and what happened. And now I'm like, yeah, no, cool. No worries. I'll just work on something else. So it just helps me be a better dentist. I'm not so focused on just dentistry. I have all these other things going on. And I'll retire from clinical dentistry, but I'll never retire from being an entrepreneur. I'm always looking to solve problems. I love having a positive group of people that I can reach out to. Like I said, remove negativity from your life, because pessimists and negative Nancys will just eat up your brain. So keep positive people around around you. And if anyone gets anything out of this podcast, it's to take action and get the help you need. Do not wait. If you're feeling the burn, or you're feeling a little depressed, or you feel like something's not right, reach out for help.
Love it, love it, love it. Thank you so much, Eric. You're amazing. And I'm so grateful that we met, and we'll have a continued blossoming relationship as the year goes through. And glad to have you on. You're my first conversation for 2026. So that's fun. And yeah, so people will be able to find out more about you and this upcoming software and stuff like that in the links below. So they'll definitely have to check that out. And thank you so much. Thank you for your honesty and your vulnerability and being a force for good and for change in the dental industry. And we definitely need more folks like you sharing your experience and sharing your hope as well. And also solutions to what people need out there. So thank you so much for being on.
Yeah. And I think maybe the title should be Listen to Some Fish and Hug a Tree. You know, that could be a good title, but
nailed it. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
It's been a pleasure to get to know you, and I love what you're doing and what you're adding to the IIDLC and being such a great member and adding so much value. You know, it's such a pleasure getting to know you.
Thanks, Eric.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.